We fell in love with queer punk actor Molly Brennan for the many different roles she plays in Steppenwolf's new production, Miss Black for President. The true story of Chicago drag queen Joan Jett Black's bid to become President of the United States. Lick Bush in 92, honey!
Supported by the group Queer Nation, Joan Jett Black ran for the highest office in the land to draw attention to the AIDS crisis and to anti-gay violence and prejudice. Joan ended up losing the election, but she did inspire others to fight for change by any means necessary. This amazing piece of historical political performance art is now the focus of Steppenwolf's new production, Ms. Black for President, co-authored and starring Moonlight's Terrell Alvin McCraney, with SpongeBob SquarePants the Musical's Tina Landau as director and co-author.
Today, the unsinkable Molly Brennan joins us to talk about the many roles she plays in Miss Black for President and some of her other career highlights, like playing Harpo Marx in Goodman Theater's Animal Crackers and clowning it up in 500 Clown Frankenstein.
Plus, Molly takes our quiz, How Irish Are You?
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
I have this to say when people say they can't get used to pronouns. Yeah. My aunts, my dad's sisters, and my dad is 70, you know, so they're all in that range, practiced when I was dating someone who used they, them, theirs pronouns. They just practiced having conversations around about this person.
Okay.
They, like, just pretend conversations to get it in their mouths. And I'm like, if you can't do it, and like, my aunts who've, you know, been around for 60, 70 years, like, you just have to decide. It's important to you.
You have to get it into your head.
Well, part of it is you just want people to feel welcome. You know?
Oh, hell yeah. But the excuse is like, I don't mean to, I just am not used to it. And it's like, well, if you practice, you'll get used to it.
Yeah, it's like playing the piano.
That's right.
Yeah. Guys, I fell in love instantly with this queer punk actor named Molly Brennan when I saw her playing a wide variety of roles in Steppenwolf Theater's new production, Miss Black for President, which tells the true story of former Feast of Fools performer and my former roommate, Joan Jett Black's actual run for President of the United States in 1992. It turns out that just like us, Molly's been a huge part of Chicago's cutting edge performance and theater scene, and she's joining us today from our home studio.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Feast of Fun.
Thanks.
So, Molly, what got you to Chicago in the first place? You moved here in 93, right?
Yes, I did. So I graduated college in 92, and I got into DePaul, into their master acting program, and I came out to audition, and I actually saw two shows at the Factory Theater, two Sean Abley shows, original, like, stage adaptation of Reefer Madness, and then another show that was called Attack of the Killer Bees, which was like a medley of bee movies put together into like a loose plot with, you know, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman was in it, and
Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah, like all of those movies, like
and, The Blob.
And, yeah, all of yes. You saw it?
No.
but I came out and auditioned for DePaul, saw those two shows, and was like, oh, shoot, theater can be like this? Wow.
For people who are not familiar with the quality of those productions, how would you describe it to somebody today?
Well, the Factory, the face of the Factory has changed a bit over the decades, but at that time it was camp, was like the jam, outrageous comedy, shock theater. Sean Abley, who's a writer in L.A. now, was kind of the head of it, and Amy Seeley, who's also now in L.A., but it, there, yeah, it was very kind of broad acting, large characters, outrageous plot lines, that sort of thing. And I, and you know, it was staged in a 60 seat storefront with no budget and like clip lights. And it was, I was like, oh my gosh, like this, this is, I want to do this.
I think that's one of the more remarkable things about Chicago. What people don't realize when they come here, they're like, wow, you guys have storefront theaters. Like where I come from, like you go to a theater, it's an actual theater. Here you right. just convert these spaces into stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's what it's about. And this is why people come to Chicago to do theater, is for opportunities just like this.
Yeah. And so I love that, fell in love, got into DePaul. And then I actually quit after a quarter because I realized I had something to say and I didn't want to be in school anymore. Like I wanted to be an artist and not take classes. And I could tell that like I could do that, and it was the right choice because I immediately started working and kind of haven't stopped. Mm-hmm. So,
and you work full time professionally as sort of a performer, an actor, a dynamic person on the scene.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a stage actor. I'm an equity actor. That's how I get my insurance, and I've been very lucky to work pretty consistently to keep that going. And then outside of being in plays, I also produce my own work. And I also like get, I guest artist a lot at like cabarets and strange events. You know, I get paid to do 7 minutes of something at fundraisers or that sort of thing. And then, you know, I teach a little bit. I mostly teach what I do, the weird.
We do stage combat at Actor Gymnasium.
I don't do stage combat.
You're not anymore.
I do clown.
Oh, okay.
That is, yeah.
Because I was going to ask you to like slap me without hurting me.
No, I will hurt you.
She's not clowning around with that one.
And we can talk about how you can make money doing that. Now that's for another show.
Let's turn back the clock to the early 90s, and it was the height of the AIDS crisis. There was no Ellen DeGeneres saying, I'm gay on television. And a lot of queer, marginalized people just didn't see themselves in television and films, and certainly not in theater. And so a lot of people felt that there was this urgency to represent the AIDS crisis, to tell the story of marginalized LGBTQ people. And that's kind of the reason why so much experimental theater and performance art started. And one question that always pops up to me and I'm usually asking, it's a great question to ask people like you. What do you think is the major difference between performance art and theater?
I think that the agreement with the audience is usually different. Performance art usually places the fourth wall behind the audience instead of between the performers and the audience. Not always. That's like a loose thing. I think that performance art tends to necessarily be political, and we can talk about what political means, but like theater sometimes tries to remove itself from being political. I think that still means that's a political move, but you know what I mean? Like there's a conscious political, social commentary or something with performance art, very self-expressive. And theater is more storytelling. So I'd say those are the kind of elements that make the two different.
And as an actor, you're sort of expected to put your own personality and persona aside. Whereas in terms of like experimental theater or performance art, it's about playing with all your experiences. And there are some schools of acting that do want you to draw on your own life experiences for the roles. And I think that's kind of where your school of thought is coming from.
Yeah, I am largely cast these days in you know, the last 10 years and maybe more for what I bring to it. I do play characters, like I change my voice or I'll change my posture, but I have a way of being on stage that where I think people are like, oh, that's Molly, like kind of no matter what I do, like
they're hooked on Molly.
Well,
I never got tired of making that one.
I do think, you know, because I get hired for very specific projects. And I think it's because I have this way of being on stage where I'm never quite in it all the way. Like I have an awareness always of the audience, almost every single person in the audience while I'm performing. I have this like, I don't like lose myself in the character. Like I can play a character, but I always am like, very aware of what the room is, and it, I think, allows for me to be in reaction to things. Like if something goes wrong, or like, you know, in Miss Black, there's a part where I kind of interrupt the play to point to something, and no spoilers, but like, you know, I kind of interrupt the play and I'm like, hey, have you noticed this? And like last night, the light, you know, I stop what's happening and I looked out in the audience and I could see someone reading her program. And
did you call her out on it?
I did. I said, hi, I see you looking at your program. And actually it was a great segue into what I actually am supposed to say in the play. But like, it's like, I can't help it. It's like, I can't help but be aware of like every little thing that's happening. I've like this.
And that unpredictability is what makes it, for me, more exciting. But for some other people, that unpredictability is the reason they avoid it in the first place. Now, performance art can take place in a theater. In the 90s, it usually took place in music venues or art galleries because those traditional theatrical spaces were usually not available to us. And they are now. And in 1992, Queer Nation and a young drag queen named Terrence, I'm sorry, I don't want to name her, but she is publicly Terrence Smith, under the name of Joan Jett Black, decided to run for mayor of Chicago. And that was such a commotion that then she decided to run for president of the United States. And they did a documentary about it. People wrote articles and books about the event. And then Joan Jett Black decided to be retired, moved to San Francisco, and we never heard from her since until this past year, where Terrell Alvin McCraney, Oscar winner for Moonlight, and Tina Landau, the director of SpongeBob SquarePants the Musical, said, hey, we're going to take this story from you guys' lives and turn it into a full production. How did you get involved in all this?
I got a call from my agent saying that Tina and Terrell wanted to see me. Now, Tina and Terrell and I worked on another project in 2004 that was another, like, experimental, they didn't know what it was going to be until it was actually in front of an audience, piece called Theatrical Essays at Steppenwolf. So we'd worked together then and, you know, kind of crisscrossed over the years seeing each other and whatever. But so they called me in to audition. I immediately, you know, it's really hard when you're an actor, mostly you don't get the part. Like there's so much auditioning and not getting it. And I was like,
You know, Terry Garr said to us, auditioning is the job of an actor.
Yes.
Doing the show is actually a bonus.
Yeah. 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 It's so much auditioning. And so I try never, like, I always think like, just kill the audition, but don't think about the play. Just kill the audition. And in this, I was like, oh, I killed the audition, but shit, I really want to do this play, you know, like I really, and at that point, the material they gave us, a lot of it was just transcripts of people who'd been like interviewed by, on the Glenda and Brenda show, like Queer Nation transcripts and ACT UP transcripts. And they just had us like prepare those monologues.
So they had found like footage of people who were politically active at the time, transcribed it, and then had you sort of bring that to life.
Yes.
And did you get to choose which ones you would do, or did they say, we want these ones from you?
They said, we want these ones from you. And I think I got an unusually long time to prepare. You usually get a week or less to prepare. And I think I had 2 weeks, and I just learned all of them. I memorized all of the copy and was ready like to do any of it. And so when Tina said, you know, the first thing she said was, you know, we asked you to do this, but could you prepare this instead, and handed me another side, but I already knew it. And I was like, yeah. So I like didn't have to take that paper and just did it.
Wow.
And I really wanted to show like, I know there are lots of factors in hiring some of it. Like, this is important to me, and I want to be part of this. So,
why did you know at the time when you were auditioning it too that it was the only role of a woman in the whole show?
At that point, they hadn't decided how they were going to cast, or even how many cast members there were going to be.
Sure.
Like, it was actually for as short of a development process, it was a long casting process because they weren't sure. They knew kind of what characters they wanted to be in there, but they weren't sure how they wanted to manipulate it. So there was like, the gender thing was not laid out, or mm-hmm. or the race thing, or like any of the kind of identifiers. It was like, we want to see everybody. And so
did you ever get to see SpongeBob SquarePants musical?
I sure did.
And to me, like, you know, Miss Black for President, I know it sounds crazy to say this, but there is a quality of that show in Miss Black for President. And part of that is that I think Tina approaches this very organically and very much like a performance art collective, in the sense that she wants sort of a chemistry to develop and even the content itself to evolve from the rehearsal process. It's how Chorus Line, the musical, was made.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was an audition that was funded by the NEA, of all things.
Remember that?
National Endowment for the Arts.
They had all these actors come on in and tell us your story and dance. And at the end of the auditions, they're like, you know what? This is the show.
Mm.
And that's where Chorus Line came from.
Oh, that's cute. I didn't know that was true. That's so interesting.
So, well, all the actors who originated those roles, that's was their live story. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's
I
so
dated
cool.
a girl who performed tits and ass.
Aww.
She had them. She had them both.
So in developing Mrs. Black for President, when you got the role, and then Tina says, darling, I want you to play. She doesn't sound like this in real life, but it's more funny. I want you to play the leather dyke, Lenny, the cowboy cable access producer, the hat lady who's homophobic, disenchanted hot non-voter. They gave you more roles than anybody else in that show.
Is that true?
Yeah, I counted it.
Oh, and also I play the college kid, the like pro-choice college kid, Eva.
Yeah.
I never counted, but you might be.
I counted.
All right.
That's awesome.
You can count to 10.
And yeah. Actually, Hat Lady was in the is based on a real. Interview with Glenda and mm-hmm. Joan. So that transcript, which is different now, but like the original thing, I actually read for her in the original audition too. But yeah, when she gave us the parts, I'm trying to think now, like we did a couple readings and sometimes I read for Mark, who is the Queer Nation mm-hmm. character. I've read for a few of the different things. I read for Q, which mm-hmm. was Sawyer's part, who plays the kind of iconic people. And then by first rehearsal, they pretty much knew who we were going to be. And so I was just like, I'll figure out who these people are and do them.
And for people who may not be able to see the show, hopefully they're going to turn it into a feature film, a Broadway production, you know. But right now it is running for the month of Pride in Chicago. And you can
got extended, I think, to July
21st. Yeah.
Is that official? Okay.
Yeah. Ooh, I think so.
It is.
I got it.
Okay, good. Okay. So it was leaked. And the reason you don't want to talk about those things ahead of time is because then people go, oh, I'll just see it next week.
Oh, my God. You're so right.
Well, too, I think, don't they have to shuffle things around? And
there's a lot of things, moving parts, you know, and doing something this industrial, this much, because there's a lot of money. There's a lot of organizations and institutions involved in this. And I would say this is, you know, for Steppenwolf Theater, this is probably one of their most, potentially, politically charged shows they've done in a long time. And not just because of the fact that you're telling the story of this marginalized person, this black drag queen, Joan Jett Black, who ran for president, but also because it's the what I call the Disneyfication of history, is that there's a danger that when it's, you know, people with a lot of money, a lot of privilege telling the story of people who are very marginalized, there's a tendency to sort of gloss over the struggle, or even worse, actually tell the opposite story.
Mm.
And so, you know, I imagine that was a lot of concern because, you know, you guys are obviously Terrell Alden McRaney is, and Tina Landau, very ethical people. How did you guys like wrestle with all those things?
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I describe the play as a piece of poetry about a moment, mm-hmm. right? So it's not a documentary. right? Like, we're not going fact for fact. Most of the characters are combinations of real people, and they're all fictionalized.
Well, Joan Jett Black is in the play is 8 feet tall.
6'9", yeah.
6'9". In real life, Joan Jett Black is about 5'5".
Yeah. So there, yeah there's, it, so it's an ode, I think, more than, you know, like an historical show. And I think that in itself is a little tricky sometimes for folks to get their mind around that, like, okay, so it's based on a real person, but it, the stuff isn't necessarily real. And like, who is this Q character who keeps coming up as these kind of pop star icons? And it's a queer telling. So it's not just this play about queer events featuring queer people. It's actually a queer telling. It is a drag show poem about the moment of Joan Jett Black getting on the floor of the Democratic National Convention, or at least that's my take. And yeah, how do you sell that to a theater, a group of patrons who are used to seeing Sam Shepard? Like, you know, how do you? And what is the reaction?
Well, I do notice that Steppenwolf is going more in the direction of trying to be more experimental, more contemporary, that new space, the bar and that cabaret theater. And it's like there's a lot of evolution happening. And, you know, for people who are not familiar, there's two theater institutions in Chicago. Well, three, actually, you know, Second City, Goodman, and Steppenwolf. Mm. And these have generated some of the biggest names with the biggest bank accounts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thankfully, a lot of those big celebrities that came from those institutions have benefited and impacted these theatrical organizations to have them have a presence for future generations to come. Mm-hmm. And so for Steppenwolf to sort of say, you know, we're going to mess with this, we're going to tinker with this because it's exciting and fun, I think it's very generous of them to do it, but it's also very risky.
I agree. And I've seen the trend of that too. Like, Passover a couple of years ago also, like, really kind of pushed the line on that, and La Ruta that was just there that pushed the line. And specifically because this was an unfinished work as we were going into the space. So like what Tina and Terrell were presenting to the like literary team and stuff was like not a finished script. And that, you know, makes it hard for a multi-million dollar organization to kind of, it's just not the structure people are used to. You're used to getting a script and like, there may be some changes, but like for the most part, you know, the script is developed. It's been through a development process. This was very fast.
Yeah.
And so it, like, we were getting pages up until opening night, new dialogue and cuts and things like that, which is a way that I'm used to working in smaller theaters, but not in larger institutions. And I think the people in the room, this is a familiar process. I mean, they really put together a team of actors who are creators as well, like not just people who learn their lines and play characters, but who actually make work and generate work. Daniel Kyrie, who plays JJ, ran a really great DIY venue for a number of years called The Dojo, and just like curated really incredible music and performance art. And Patrick Andrews has been involved in this kind of queer new wave performance art band for a number of years. You know, so people in it are all makers. So for the team of actors, this was a very familiar process. But to do it in a large institution is a little bit like, well, we don't know what it's going to be. We'll know opening night, I guess.
Well, considering that, you know, Joan Jett Black is played by Oscar award-winning screenwriter, right? Terrell Alvin McCraney for Moonlight.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you're the Oscar winner for the screenwriter. Where's the script?
Yeah.
And you have one job to do. Well, actually, I have two.
I hope that if this show does get, there's a Tony Awards called Chicago equivalent, get the Jeff Award, that you guys don't get the award, but then get it at the last second, like Moonlight did.
Oh, wow.
Oh, we have a terrible error.
Oh, my God.
Oh, best play of the year goes to Miss Black for President. We're so sorry.
It's like Terrell's like,
curse.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that would be hilarious. I mean, but I think that that's part of Again, like queering the narrative is like, don't do it the way it's been done. Like defy the dominant paradigm, like figure out other ways to make art. The play is the play it is because of who was in the room. It's not because of the script we were given, but like the development process we went through. We did so much stuff with Tina where she led us just doing viewpoint exercises, which is like just being in relationship to each other in the room. And like, one might look at that and go, well, when are we going to memorize our lines? But it doesn't really work like that. You build a relationship. The way she works, at least in the projects I've done with her, is she builds this ensemble and we take care of each other and we kind of have this intuitive knowledge of each other. Mm-hmm. And that relationship allows us to quickly kind of assimilate in new lines, new ideas, new entrances, new costume pieces, because we're there for each other. We're holding each other. And again, that's a very queer thing too, right? Like instead of thinking of it being like a director and a playwright and a cast of actors and having this kind of hierarchy, it's more fluid than that. And it feels safe to make errors. It feels safe to make risks. And what you wind up with is a piece of art like Miss Black for President, which defies some theatrical definition.
That's why I feel like in terms of, you know, experimental or avant-garde theater, you know, some Tina Landau is kind of right along the lines of someone like Julie Taymor, who just, you know, really transformed representation wise and cultural wise what Broadway was doing at the time when Lion King debuted on Broadway. I know it sounds crazy to say, oh, Lion King was this really amazing, groundbreaking musical, but it really was. And its impact is being felt still to this day, you know, and in a lot of ways, it's like Tina Landau's work sort of is a sister to what, you know, the Lion King and you know, Julie Taymor's done. And part of it is, I think, is this feminist perspective of wanting to take this structure and not tinkering it because it makes necessarily because it, we're just here to fuck with the system, because there's some really great things that come from that. Now, as a creator, you also put together a very similar show that, like Feast of Fools was, which is called The Fly Honey Show.
Yes. So I'm a part of The Fly Honey Show. Yes.
And you guys are also, you know, fucking with the system there.
Yeah. And it's going into its 10th year this year. I've been involved for 4 years, so I'm not an originator. I was a fan first, and then I got brought on to the team. That is it's looking at the structures of cabaret and burlesque and making it body positive and defying the definition of what sexy is and highly political. And, you know, this kind of, it's a very long show. It's like a 2-hour show with all kinds of stuff in it. The central entertainment in it is the dancing. So there are these amazing dances that are a combination of burlesque and hip hop dance, and there's this whole band with a horn section, and they do these incredible mashups of old music and new music, and then there are other artists, stand up comedians and performance artists and drag artists, and there's, you know,
and you have a popsicle stand too. No, I'm just kidding. But isn't there like a temptation, you know? And part of me was like, it's about saying yes to everything. And you're like me, you know, like that's why I instantly connected with you. Part of the, you know, there is the vanity there. Like, I love you because you're exactly like me. But part of it is that you're like, you're so eager to, you know, like you, it's this kind of like all you can eat buffet of culture. And it's about giving somebody that experience, is to be able to explore so many different textures and moments in one show.
Yeah.
And then the drawback of that is then, you know, at the end of the night, everything's just left this scrambled, disorganized mess. And then you have to put it all back together.
Yeah. It's a lot of labor, but it's I don't know how else to do it. Or I'm not interested maybe in doing
it. It's a hard path to take.
Yeah.
And part of it, do you think, you know, your Irish heritage is, you know, because so one thing we joke about is like, you know, in terms of the Irish heritage is sometimes looking, there's an expression in Puerto Rico, there you're looking for the fifth leg to the cat.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
There's how many legs does a cat have? Four. But you're all looking for that fifth leg for some reason, meaning you're always looking for something that isn't there, like chasing that pot. What is the expression?
But someday you are going to come across that cat, and it will have five legs.
Well, I saw it at a state fair. But there's an expression.
That is a weird expression, though, right?
Like when you hear
that's no leg.
That's the dick. You hear this expression about like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, which we all think of like Lucky Charms cereal. We don't understand that there's actually like a really deep meaning for it, which is that you're like, it's this desire of chasing a dream that you can never get to. And that is the gold, is the journey.
Yeah. Right. Like the looking for a fulfillment, like a non-existent fulfillment.
You know that when trans people are taking training to feminize their voices, there's a passage that they actually read that you know, the gold at the end of the rainbow. And I don't know if you guys have, but it's been portrayed in the film Trans America.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, in the opening scene about it and stuff. I just, that's really interesting. And it's like, I wish somebody maybe like would turn that into a poster.
There's tons of stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
People reciting the passage. Because it contains a lot of like, you know, the American speech. And so it's like, if you get all these elements right, you know, you'll have the voice that you want.
This is the voice I want to use.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I, like I hear that and I like honor people on their journeys. Mm-hmm. And there's this other thing, there's this whole other thing that I hear a lot from my friends who are trans women who are like, fuck that, my voice is my voice. Yeah, yeah. And like that is also like valid. And if I have a deep voice, it doesn't make me less of a woman. And, you know, like it's so interesting. It's interesting how things change, how our perspectives change, and even between like that, you know, like having like, what is a feminine voice? Like, what is that even?
It's like,
you
know, like I was raised by Irish nuns, and some of those have the butchest voices there are. It's like you'd hear them like down the hallway, you're like, oh my God, you know, that kind of thing. So
you have a quiz, Mark.
I have a quiz because Molly, I saw your name, Molly Brennan.
Yes,
that's a pretty Irish name.
It is.
You know, so how Irish are you?
I mean, okay, so my dad's side is Irish, and then my mom's side is English, Scottish, and Irish.
Right,
so I've got it coming Irish in from both sides. Yeah,
we'll test you to see how Irish you are. So you're out to lunch with your friend. French fries are sitting on your friend's plate. Do you A, respect your friend's food choices and leave them to eat in peace? B, ask politely if you can have a fry? Or C, reach over and take the fucking fries because potatoes belong to everyone?
I'm going to go with C, although I'd probably ask and say, may I have one? Those belong to everyone.
Okay. All right. That is the correct answer. Faust, are you keeping score?
One.
Okay. Sinead O'Connor tears up the Pope's photo yet again on live TV. Mm. A, do you delete all her music from your music library? Or B, know that she was right 27 years ago and she's still fucking right today?
B, hell yeah.
Okay.
Mark, sorry, I was looking for the rainbow passage. But okay. Sorry. Yeah, so you got two right. So
oh
far.
Oh my gosh.
Two of two.
Margaret Thatcher was A, a wrong cunt, or B, a right cunt.
I'm not sure if I have my vernacular right.
We'll just say it. Margaret Thatcher is
a right cunt.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Although I think she was wrong, but I think right is.
Well, I think that's how they say it. Yes.
Yeah,
very good. Very good. You're turning out to be very Irish. Molly Malone from the famous folk song. Do you know it?
Yes.
How did she die? A, she was killed by a leprechaun. B, run over by a wheelbarrow, or C, syphilis.
Syphilis.
Yeah, that's right.
Yay!
Well, they say a fever, but they interpret it as syphilis. Yes.
You got to give Molly some hard questions. It's all softballs.
I'm nervous. I've been nervous the whole time, but yikes.
Yeah, so far, she's getting all of them.
Okay, odds of finding a four-leaf clover. 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000, or 1 in 1,000,000?
I think it's 1 in 10. I think it's low.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
I found them all the time.
Okay.
But you always think you're going to have luck, and it's just, you know.
And excuse my language here, but what do you get when you cross a whore with a leprechaun?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
A little fucker about yay big.
A little fucker.
That was the bonus question.
That's good, though.
You got it all right. You're pretty fucking Irish.
Hey, thanks.
You're welcome.
No, you'd be like, are you ready to fight about it?
You were, when I first met you, you were saying, because your name is Molly, which is, you know, synonymous with drugs.
Yes.
That sometimes you get some confusion because of that.
Yes. Well, my parents and my sister are burners. They go to Burning Man. Mm-hmm. And
your parents do.
Yes. In fact, my parents just renewed their 50-year wedding vows at Burning Man this last year.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And my sister and I, like, did the ceremony out on the playa. It was great.
Aww.
I have gone to Burning Man twice. And both times I am equally revered and the object of disappointment because my name is Molly. So, like, people are like, "Hi, I'm Molly." Or they're like, oh, Molly. Like, that, like I'm...
Like, you should be carrying it around with you
yes,
at all times.
Exactly.
Like, right here. Mm-hmm. It's right here on my utility belt.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you're in love these days.
I'm in love. In love with Maxine. She's wonderful. She and I live together.
She's not Irish.
She's not. She is. She's Irish and Italian. Okay. Irish, half and half.
So
red,
you fight
red,
half
she's got
of
red
the
hair.
Time.
All right.
What?
You fight half of the time.
We never fight.
No.
You were saying that it was like your relationship is based on let's be nice to each other.
It really is, which sounds really simplistic. And I don't know that it's simplistic. It's simple and lovely. And yes, we're nice to each other. Let's be nice to each other is our mantra. And we are. She has a job downtown in the Loop in Chicago. And then she spends a lot of time helping other people. She does a Feed the Homeless Coalition. She teaches marginalized groups about firearm safety and use.
That's pretty fierce.
She's just like a very generous. We help people financially and otherwise, who are having a hard time. And
is she giving out grants, or is she just like Venmoing people who are like,
she's DIY.
I need a new wig.
My nails need done.
I don't know if that would fly, but she's DIY. Mm. So
that's wonderful. I know it's not relevant, but I think in terms of like, being gender non-binary and queer and embracing trans people, a big, I would say a big point of contention, especially in lesbian scenes, is the inclusion of trans women.
Yeah. Maxine is a trans woman. Yes. Mm-hmm. I actually haven't had so much personal experience with,
because you're living a pretty progressive, dynamic scene.
I have a lot of friends who are trans, which is, I'm not sure how that worked out, but it's
because you're lucky.
I am lucky.
And quality goods when you see them.
True that.
But have you watched the first season of Pose yet?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God.
Well, some ally you are.
Well, yeah, she doesn't watch it.
What?
No, we watch Letterkenny. That's like her favorite show right now.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh my gosh, it's about these Canadian rednecks. It's hilarious.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
Haven't. It's in my mind, it doesn't make any sense. Gender doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It never has. I don't know how to explain this. Well, I can tell a story. I remember I was in high school, and my friend was staying over at my house, and we were talking. She was talking about a boy that she liked, and I said, "Well, wouldn't you still like this person if he wasn't a boy?" And she said, "What are you talking about?" And I couldn't describe what I was talking about. All I could think was, what does it matter? Like, that doesn't matter to me. Gender, like, I respect when people are on the binary. I I identify as a woman. Mm-hmm. I use she, her pronouns. But, you know, like I...
But you're very non-conventional in your presentation.
Yeah, yeah, I am. That's true. And you know...
You don't live there, but you're sometimes a tourist.
Yeah, and a lot of the shows I do, I play a man. Yeah, so that's true.
How many times have you been cast as a man?
A lot. I played Harpo Marx.
Oh, wow.
At the Goodman.
For Animal Crackers.
For Animal Crackers. Okay. I just, in the early spring, I played Geppetto in Pinocchio at the House Theater. In Looking Glass Alice at Looking Glass Theater, I play a few different guys, Tweedledum and the Walrus. I also play the Red Queen, but the Red Queen was actually originated, the role was actually originated by a man, so like, I'm on a man's track.
Who's been painting my roses red? Who dares to taint with vulgar paint the royal flower bed?
Phil Smith, casting director, I hope you're listening. Sounds like we might
I'm
have a new contestant.
The classic original Disney one.
That you watched on acid.
I think I've watched the Alice in Wonderland animated Disney thing. God. Too many times.
Trippy.
Have you ever like seen a role that you didn't get? Like for me, I'm just like, who are you, girl? You know, the caterpillar is just this wonderfully luscious, campy character that I think you and I would devour.
Oh, thanks. You I know? Played the caterpillar.
You have?
Yes. Well, in that same show, three of us play the caterpillar at the same time, and we do all these like overlaying vocals.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
A-E-I-O-U.
Yeah. And like everything's like we say some lines together or apart, and we do like partner acrobatics and kind of tumble over each other and get on each other's backs and do like all this interesting stuff. Anyway.
I'm cool. Fascinated.
But yeah. Oh, and the other big kind of dude part I played Hal in Picnic that Will Davis directed over at ATC. And Picnic is this kind of part of the American canon. Mm-hmm, and Will Davis just kind of cast it in this really non-conventional way. And I played the football player that like comes back to town after kind of not succeeding in real life. And that was a great part too. But yeah, I get cast as men sometimes, which is great. Talking about like
gender identity relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then so sometimes I explain it to people is like some people can handle a long distance relationship and other people can't. And gender sometimes I think about as more as geography. Maybe you're an East Coaster, maybe you're a Midwesterner, maybe you live in the East, well, you know, your cat. But you sometimes like to travel, and other people never leave their own state.
Interesting.
So when you and your partner or your loved ones reside in different parts of the country, you can meet together in certain different ways. But other times it's like, you know, you're in New York and I'm in L.A. What are we going to do, you know?
That's interesting. I'd have to give that some thought.
But you were saying...
But I see, you know, on the, of course, the stupid internet, like people saying things about, XX chromosome and XY chromosome, and they're only men and women, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know how to tell you that my girlfriend is a woman. Like, I don't know how to make you believe that because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how she was assigned at birth, like, you know, that it's not, I can't, you have to
get it or you don't get it.
Yeah.
Right?
Like
you should get it.
Like, you know, that there's that kind of semi-problematic campaign of like, do you really think I belong in this bathroom where you'd see a person who had transitioned and very clearly looked like the gender that, you know, that they are on the binary, right? Mm-hmm. So like a trans man saying like, you know, with a beard and, you know, whatever, like, should I be in the women's? And of course I'm like, well, I think bathrooms are bathrooms. But the point is like all the trans people in my life, like it doesn't occur to me to doubt how they feel because it's how they feel. Like how we all feel is real. Whatever's inside of is real. And it's not up to someone on the outside to say, well, no, you're this because you don't know. You just believe people when they say, this is who I am. You go, okay. Like what is the stake in denying someone saying who they are.
Why are you so invested in this binary?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I mean,
and you being the one to classify who's what.
Yeah, and, you know? And when there's all this like there, and there's all this scientific evidence, and you can point to that. Although a lot of the time, the people like that you're arguing against, they don't care about science, so it doesn't matter.
They're also climate deniers, probably.
Right. You know, they do the like brain function stuff, and then like all the variances of sex, right? Like in terms of chromosomes, in terms of hormones. I mean, I myself like have the parts of, you know, a female sex assigned person, right? Like I've got a vulva, I've got a working ovaries and uterus, and I developed breasts when I went through puberty. I also have a very low estrogen body. I don't produce a lot of estrogen. So what does that mean? Like, what am I?
It means your odds for cancer are lower?
Yeah, maybe. Certain kinds, I guess. Yeah. I develop muscle easily, which, you know, is maybe a thing. But there's a variance, it's a spectrum, and science can show that. But even if you don't look at the science, just when a person says, I am this, then just, okay. Yeah. Like
respect it.
Yeah, it doesn't, if, I mean, the only time that I don't respect someone saying I'm this is if they say I am a Nazi, then I'm like, fuck you. But like, you know,
did you hear about the, there's a knitting website, you know, the community forum. And let me pull up the name here.
Is it for knitting enthusiasts?
It's for knitting enthusiasts, people who knit, and they say that they, you know, they're deleting and banning anybody who is a pro-Trump supporter. Like, you can be a Trump supporter, but don't bring that bullshit to our knitting thing, because this is about knitting. And if you're out there trying to put this political agenda, and as they understand it, they understand that Trump stands for white supremacy, and they're not going to stand for that.
Mm-mm.
Good. I mean, I don't. We get comments on our website. Believe it or not, there's listeners who are Trump supporters. We just did a show about how the complicated relationship that LGBTQ people have with the rainbow. And you know, the creator of the rainbow flag said, this is an incomplete work of art. It is for future generations and marginalized people to improve upon it or create their own.
And some people lost their minds when some more stripes were added, right? Yeah.
In Philadelphia. And I'm like, what part of improve upon your own did you not understand?
Yeah. You'll still have that flag.
But the thing is that, one, besides us being disconnected from our own history and knowledge, and they don't listen to Feast of Fun, which is a big crime.
Idiots.
It's also, too, that this six-stripe rainbow flag has kind of become this corporate logo that corporations like Nabisco can stick on an Oreo cookie and say, hey, we love you. We love your money. And I'm like, yeah, but do you have diversity in your leadership, not just in your employees? Do you have a non-discrimination clauses that, you know, prevent people from being fired for being LGBTQ?
Right.
Those are the things that matter.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I go back and forth between like this notion of like rainbow capitalism and being mad about it. But also I think about, you know, when I was in college and had like my little like rainbow necklace and like how self-conscious and nervous I was to just wear that. And, you know, people didn't even know what it meant necessarily, you know.
Most people didn't, right?
But like you felt like you were doing something. And there is something about knowing that, you know, you go to Target and a little girl who likes other little girls is going to see a shirt that represents her. And so like, as much as I'm like, oh, like, it's not just about like marketing our own culture back to us. It's more than that. There's a side of it that I'm also like, but I like the rainbow Chuck Taylor's.
Well, the rainbow in Northern, what is it? In the Northern Hemisphere is a symbol of hope. Because it follows a terrible storm. And in the Southern Hemisphere, it's an ominous symbol because it precedes one.
Interesting.
But in Western cultures...
And we're the storm? What's...
Well, we are the coming storm. So the idea is like I wear a rainbow wristband and I have for long, long times, you know. And part of me is like in a workplace environment, instead of having to come out to people... It's a promise that I make to myself and I make to my coworkers and any customer, any artist that I work with. I'm going to do everything I can to acknowledge you, to make things better, and to listen to you.
And I will never flood your world again.
Nice. Yes. Well, it's flagging.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good. So there's listener says he's a Trump. So we're saying, you know, it's a tricky space because this rainbow that is this beautiful symbol. It's a promise to heal and to grow. It also, just like anything, can be commodified. And Trump was selling Rainbow Pride t-shirts. One of the most evil, one of the most homophobic, transphobic, fascist dictators of the modern age, agreed, next to Hitler himself, is using rainbow flags to market to LGBTQ people who are so dumb or misinformed that they think that he's aligning with their interests at all. And so this guy who listens to our show. And either he's either trolling us, or two, I, you know, did search his IP address because, you know, we got receipts around here, piece of fun. You guys cannot hide. And so, and I found out, you know, and I think he may be fucking with us. But part of it is, it's like, it is to me, like, really astounding when I meet people. And I had a friend of mine who, she was trans, very shy, very quiet. You know, one day she said, you know what? I think Trump's going to be a great president. I'm just like, my eyes are like inside of my head is like Bugs Bunny going, argh! But, you know, and part of it is, I think this person's probably struggling with racism, is probably, you know, struggling with a lot of incomplete things,
information.
And they're disconnected. And part of it is like, it's so important to be part of our community. You know, so when I tell people, it's like, go see the Fly Honey show, it's not because you're going to have a good time.
But you will have a good time, right?
Not just because you're going to be dazzled and your world will be rocked, but because this is a part of you becoming a human being and growing up and being part of a culture of love.
Yeah. I mean, and going outside of like your comfort zone is super important in consuming art. One, like having your dollars go to marginalized people is always great. You'll get some entertainment in return. But like, on that tip, as an artist, I have been very lucky to be invited to events where often I'm one of the only white people there. And I'm hearing over the years, you know, how people feel about me and us, you know, and white people, and being able to hear that in an uncensored space where I'm in the minority and go, oh my God, like, oh wow, I have to do something different than what I'm doing. Or like, I have a number of friends who are disabled and being in art spaces that are centered around disability and like hearing uncensored opinions and experiences about that. Like, these things, going outside of your zone to take in art and to contribute to the art is so important, not just for artists to develop our work and to understand, you know, how the rest of the world is, but for all of us just to be like, oh, wow, it's, you know, I'm a majority. I'm cis. I'm white. I mean, I'm queer, but I don't wear that in the same way as you wear, you know, skin color or
you're highly desired entertainer in Chicago.
Well, thank you.
But cast in many luminary roles.
What else do you have coming up? Because Joan Jett Black, President, Ms. Black, the president, runs to July 21st.
It does. And then I'm going to be one of the hosts of the Fly Honey show. And that opens August 8th and I think closes September 9th. It's a month or 5 weeks.
Is it always on the weekends or what
nights?
It's
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 10:30. So it's
that's
a late
totally
night show.
Doable.
Yeah, so you can like go to another thing and then come to us after. So I'm going to do that. And then.
And do people get free lap dances with every bucket of popcorn? I'm just kidding.
I think that's a different thing. That's not.
Oh, that's Peaches Crisis Showgirls.
Yeah, no. Different. And then after that, I actually have a pending contract that I can't talk about, but I have another show that'll be after that. And then I have to figure out what I'm going to do.
But you've been doing that for 20 some years now. So
yeah, I'm also
kind of used to it, I would imagine.
Yeah. And there's a thing I want to produce, called Occupy Open Mic, where I would like to get some of the artists that I think are great in town who generate their own work and go to some of the bar open mics and kind of surprise the audience by presenting well-crafted performance art and so, like surprising work,
like gorilla kind
of
thing.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you
like
just show up and they don't know you're coming.
Yeah, but you know, it's a sign up, so like anybody can sign up. But like, if we had like 5 to 10 like artists doing things that are not just acoustic guitar, not just stand up, but like other kinds of performance, like that's a thing, and I'd like to get some funding together, because what I'd like to do is to be able to pay the artist, just me pay them, and then we go to like, you know, a different open mic every week and like present this work and like, you know, start a conversation about what, because it, you know, theater is inaccessible to so many people because it's expensive, and also it's the vernacular, like there's a lot of theater is for people who are in theater, or you know what I mean? Like, and
when we went to see, Ms. Black for President, it's, you know, Faust and I were among the younger people in the audience, and we're middle-aged.
Yeah, right.
You know? And so it's, you know, you would think that a show like that, because of its queer content, would appeal to a lot of queer people. But are queer people going out to see this kind of theater, you know?
Yeah,
that's why part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, so that people that are listening to this show, that are in Chicago, that are planning to come to Chicago, and will, you know, understand that this is a show you can see, and it's something that you would probably enjoy.
Everybody asks me, what's the best drag show to see in Chicago right now? Miss Black for President.
Oh, my goodness.
And part of it is, you know, and I was talking about that we're getting Miss Joan Jett Black in the flesh, coming on the podcast soon. We're building up to it. And I asked her, like, what has this past 20 years been like for her? She was kind of describing it as like she's Rip Van Winkle and woke up in a world dominated by politically neutral drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race, where all the political aspects, with the exception of Lady Bunny and some other drag queens, but for the majority, it's very interesting to see these young artists go to theater school. And all they want to do and all they want to talk about is like lip syncing, contouring your makeup and styling a wig. And that's
it's all about the cointadas.
And that's it. They have a career path in theater school programs on getting becoming a Rue Girl.
Interesting.
And
now in Chicago, there's such a great, politicized drag scene. There are some great queens doing some really
I don't think status
edgy.
Updates I disagree with that in some regard, because status updates is not politics.
No, I mean what they're
like
doing
get out
on
in
stage
the street. The performances.
I want you to get people on the streets.
We
and
don't
in the
get out
booth.
As much as we used to, but yes, for sure.
There's yeah, I mean,
a lot
like,
of
do you know
racism?
Do you know Imp Queen?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I just find her work to be so bizarre and strange. And when she you know, sometimes does some spoken word stuff, and the content of her work is compelling and upsetting and like and all of this. I think she's great. And yeah, I think there are a number of artists who are not just. I hear what you're saying, and I think it's business now. It's like anything, right? Yeah. Like now, there's a TV show that's had multiple seasons. Mm-hmm. Like it becomes a path. It becomes a defined path, whereas drag didn't have such a defined path before, right?
It's a gold rush.
It was like, it's like the Wild West. Like, we're figuring it out, and we have all these ideas, and what happens in a capitalist society is somebody figures out how to make money off of that trend, and then they sell it back to us with a set of rules that we didn't make, you know? Like
you said it.
You said that so beautifully. Yeah. It's other people's dreams come true.
Mm.
Or you said that sometimes other people's dreams come true for you and you don't even want them.
Yeah, well, it's more, like they're... I haven't opening up for Garth Brooks. Like, I actually love Garth Brooks, but like, I never would have thought like, oh, my dream is to open for Garth Brooks, but I did. And it was super cool. But I was like, I think this is someone else's dream. And then the other thing was when I was in a show at Lyric Opera and I was like, I was in a Second City show at Lyric Opera, and it was like a send up of operas, you know, like a parody of opera. And like, I was like, this is super cool to perform on this giant stage in this like iconic building. But I think this is somebody else's dream that I'm having, because it was never like a goal to like do this. I kind of have found myself in these incredible, like I feel really lucky. Like I find myself in these incredible situations where I'm like, I think I'm scamming on somebody else's life path.
What is your dream?
Oh,
is that even possible to put into words?
Anarchy, I guess. I am interested in a world of self-governance. I'm interested in a world where we take responsibility for ourselves and take care of each other. Mm-hmm.
What's your selfish dream?
Oh, my. So I'm living it. I mean, making my living as an artist is like the ongoing kind of transformational dream of
is
like,
there like a role that you'd eager to sink your or property? You already did the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland.
That's your dream. See, I've lived your dream.
Are you, girl?
Like doing a show I did a show at PS122 that I made in New York. And like,
for people who don't know, PS122 is a very well thought of, very important performance art space in New York City.
And I've done two shows there that I helped make. And so that was a huge thing. I'd really love to play Lady Bracknell in Importance of Being Earnest. Mm. I played her in college, and I think it's a great role, and I think it's a great play, and I'd love to do that again. But I don't have an idea of like, I want to work at this place. There are a lot of people that I want to be in a room with, but most of them aren't famous people. They're like Chicago people that I've done something with or seen in something. I did something a couple years ago called Battle Axe Betty, which was a reworking of a script I wrote for The Factory back in the 90s. And it's a sword and sorcery kind of heavy metal musical. And I did it with a ton of artists. And I tried to get in the room as many representations of people as I could. And so we had integrated American Sign Language in the room and Audio Describe in the room and different mobility abilities and different racial, ethnic, and gender identities. And I kind of just picked some of my favorite people and was like, oh, let's get 36 of us together and put this heavy metal musical up. And doing that kind of work is like doing collaborative work with all kind of, like, that looks like our city. That is an ongoing dream too, is just to like work with amazing artists who have like all these different life experiences and perspectives, and to hear like what it's like to be somebody other than me. Like that room is I want that room over and over and over again, that kind of collaborative.
Well, you're in a good city for it.
Hell yeah.
Molly, part of it is that you're like us, you're searching for people who share a similar aesthetic, a viewpoint. And what I really adore about your work is that you're doing this. You're sort of like the real life version of this podcast, you know?
Oh my gosh. No pressure.
In the sense that you're going around and you're finding these really creative, amazing people, and you're showcasing them and you're nurturing them. You're giving them a space to shine. And I think that's just a really thing that should be celebrated and applauded.
Oh, thanks.
And I want to thank you so much for coming and talking to us today, because it really means a lot to me, because I really believe in your work and I'm very excited about not just Miss Black for President, but all the other stuff that you do.
Thank you so much. Can we be friends also in real life?
Yeah,
awesome. Yes. That's best.
And put us on your mailing list.
Okay. I don't have one.
You don't have one? We should probably just put, we get one out there for you too.
People can follow Molly Brennan on Instagram at Monster Clown Girl. Don't mess with Molly. and everywhere else, you have other places, right? You have a website and other stuff?
I'm a little behind
Instagram,
on that.
Instagram, Twitter, is any of that?
Yeah, okay. Instagram's the best, I think. Or Facebook. Okay. As long as you like a lot of radical political posts, you can follow me on Facebook.
They do. Our audience is great. Listen, we've had our audience. We're now in our 15th season of Feast of Fun. We started in February of 2005, and we wouldn't be able to do it if it weren't for the listeners that are listening right now who have become members. And you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen.
Membership does have its privileges, darling. You also can join us on Patreon. It's kind of like the little sister of Feast of Fun. It's where we give you a little bit nuggets, a little taste, a little titillation about what's to come. And that's at patreon.com/feastoffun. Go see Miss Black for President. Go see the Fly Honey show, honey. Molly Brennan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.